When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Run like a wild man.
I watched you struggle and I watched you wrestle with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The first inhabitants of the Bahamas were known as the Taino people.
The original inhabitants of the Bahamas were known as the Taino people. The Imperial Arena time is 8:56 p.m. You're listening to the Orange and True podcast, powered by the friendly folks at collegeandmagnolia.com. Greetings and salutations, Orange and Truthers, it's me, at Senecro2 on Twitter. You can find me at Senecro on Venmo. Joining me, to one side via the magic of the internet, is Ryan S. Starrett on Twitter. The S stands for, hey, at least we don't have Rick Barnes as our coach, right?
Yeah. I know you're always down for a good hate fest in Rick Barnes. So did you see the Tennessee-Villanova game at all?
I didn't see this game. I did see the score. It looked very Rick Barnesian. Although, it'd be more Rick Barnesian if he was like thought of as better than Villanova. Or if he had like the best score in the history of the game on his team and like couldn't get him the ball in the last 2 minutes.
They've got a great guard that played at Auburn last year, who I think had like maybe 2 points.
Yeah, but he's not Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant plays for Auburn, though.
That's true. That is true. Kevin Durant wears Jabari Smith pajamas. All right. See the other side of me. Giving you the full Fort Payne ASMR. A man who knows his way around Liga Un, the AU chief.
Kyle.
Bonjour, Chief.
Hola.
What are we thankful for today, guys? What are we thankful for? This is the gratitude week. We got a gratitude gobbler coming up on Thursday.
Basketball season, baby.
Thankful that it's basketball season.
Thankful for Bruce Pearl.
The long national nightmare is over.
Bruce, it is time Jeremiah for basketball. Pearl. Actually, do we know Bruce's middle name? What is Bruce's
Jeremiah
middle name?
Jeremiah was a good guess. I don't know.
I'm going to look it up while we talk.
Well, Chief took basketball, Ryan, so what are you left with?
Tailgating? That's been fun this year. I mean, got to hang out with friends again. Got to hang out in Baton Rouge for a tailgate. You know, even if the product on the field's not fun, the day's still good.
I'm thankful for keeping it Auburn-centric, too, for Zakobi McClain. Even though the team hasn't been great, he feels like he's going to be one of those guys that goes on to have a really good career in the NFL, and you're like, oh, yeah, we wasted him. So, but happy that he's a thing and he's on our team. Him and Owen Papo really didn't get the Carlos Dansby, Dontarius Thomas career out of those two that we could have.
So it's kind of like when we had the two starting cornerbacks for the NFL champion last year.
Yeah.
Whole lot of nothing with them.
Right. Cool. All right, let's get football out of the way. We lost.
It's Bruce Allen Pearl, by the way.
Whoa.
We should
Allen.
We should someone
oh,
should
I write a cover song coming on.
Yes, there should be a cover song called BAP.
BAP? Instead of WAP. I hear what you're saying. I don't do raps.
Well, it doesn't have to be you. It could be one somebody. Of our wonderful listeners.
There's some, you know, sweaty jokes in there.
Great. Gross, Ryan. Lord have mercy.
need a mop and a bucket.
All right.
When BAP is on this floor. Anyway, I don't
one
know
One thing
any
we need to mop up is how filthy the football team looked against South Carolina.
Boy, that was rotten.
I went and met a friend of mine today at a pub here downtown. And guess what? The Auburn-South Carolina game was on TV. I walked in on the SEC network. It was not a fun thing to relive,
But as I relived it, I realized, you know what? End of the first quarter, 14-0. Again, I was like, okay.
Felt great.
This looks like
the script was fine.
Tank Bigsby ran for a bunch of yards. The thing's going great. Just keep giving him the ball. What could go wrong?
Yeah, what could go wrong indeed?
Man,
Murphy's Law.
I'm pretty sure the coaching staff was asking the same question because they made absolutely zero changes at the half.
Do you think?
Great game.
Okay, as a Cowboys fan, I oftentimes thought that Jason Garrett did this, and I think I'm getting close to believing that this is a thing that Mike Bobo does. Do you think that they are so committed to quote unquote balance that they will throw a pass when they should definitely run just because they need to get more passes? Well, we haven't thrown in a long time.
I think it was 33 passes to 32 rushes in this game.
I think that they don't want to get too ahead of their skis here, running the ball too much. So they'll just throw it when running's working, throwing's not. You should keep running it. They are so committed to balance that maybe they're just throwing it to throw it for no reason.
Just do whatever's working until it's not working, and then try something else.
Well, and see, that's what Gus would do. And I was telling my brother and I watched this game together, and he was like, we should shoot run and tank every play. I go, well, Gus, the problem is that Gus would 100% have run tank 50 times against South Carolina. We probably would have won. Tank would have gotten hurt or needed oxygen on the sideline. And so there's like, that's the other way, is that complete lack of balance. Oh, this is working. You're going to get this 40 times in a row. But I don't, yeah. Some of these play calls seem like they were just like, well, we ran it last time, so we better throw it this time. As opposed to just what works best right now.
There's the one play call that we could also complain about. Right?
Yeah, fourth and one.
The 20-yard downfield pass on fourth.
That is a fireable play call. I don't care.
And watching it again today, against my own will.
Worse.
What struck me the most was not that it was a pass, is that it was a play action toss sweep pass. Yeah. The toss sweep would have been a bad call there too.
Right.
So like it wasn't like you were, it'd be one thing if you ran one of those like jump passes where like TJ Finley gets the ball and fakes like he's going to run, because that would have been a good call on fourth and one.
Right.
And then you hit him over the top. You ran a play you shouldn't have run on fourth and one as a fake. To run another play you shouldn't have run on fourth and one.
So the only thing that I can think of that possibly justifies that
is that you
just have zero faith in your offensive line to be able to like even allow TJ Finley to lay across the line. I mean, I really
did that on another point in the game.
Later.
He was running for 6-7 yards a carry.
He did it the next
time. Like he had options.
They lined up.
Think about it. This wasn't later in the game where the offense is totally stalled out. This was the drive after the two touchdowns.
And this also wasn't the thing that used to piss people off for no reason about Gus, where it'd be fourth and one and you line up in the shotgun. They lined up in the I formation, like it was 1993, and still threw it out of an I formation.
Yeah. Back to what you were talking about with that balance of how it was 33 to 32 runs.
It's balance for the sake of balance. It makes no sense.
But I don't mind that they did that. It's that Tank, I think, touched the ball four times in the second half. Like, give it to the guy that's destroying them, please. If you're gonna try to keep it balanced, like I don't understand. Anything that happened after the first two touchdown drives Saturday.
This entire season, it has felt like the offense has been afraid to do the things that everybody knows works, because maybe they're afraid of getting them hurt or afraid of being predictable or whatever.
Right.
You know, it's hey, why not let Bo run a little bit? Why not hand the ball off to Tank more? Why not, you know, feed Kobe Hudson when he's having a big day? It's I don't know. It's so frustrating.
Well, why when you haven't been able to move the ball basically the whole second half, there's 3 minutes left and change, and they stop you, and it's what, fourth and five,
I think.
Five.
Yeah.
All right, why are you punting? I know we ended up stopping them, but we stopped them.
No, I agree
and we
with you, Chief. That's a stupid call. I was mad when it happened.
I was really mad. We did end up stopping them. I get it. Okay, it makes them look like geniuses, except that, you know, we didn't get the call on the punt.
Or bad things happen on special teams.
Right.
Regardless of the call, bad things happen on special teams all season, Robert.
Well, and it's not like they had just, like, moved the ball at will the whole game. They only scored, what, 17 points?
21. Yeah.
21, okay. So, like, just get your defense back out there and tell them to nut
we
up.
Scored 17. Like, we scored 17 points in an American football game in the year of our Lord, 2021.
And only attempted to score 20.
Yeah.
Because we missed a field goal, and that's the only other attempt we made.
That's the other thing. A field goal inside the 10-yard line.
Yeah.
Down four in the fourth quarter.
Here's the problem with that field goal. And now, this is the issue with that field goal.
But you have a hurt kicker.
Because I watched it again today. And the snap was low to Finley on second down. If that snap's not low, they're running a play to Tank on second and six.
Yeah.
Let's pretend he gets 2 yards, 3 yards. He was averaging 7 a carry. Let's pretend he gets 3 yards. Now you're on third and four from the four. They're probably not throwing the ridiculous pass play they ran on third and goal from the 12. And then you're not kicking the stupid field goal. The field goal happened because the bad snap happened on second down. And then they called a pass. They had to throw a pass on third down because it was third and goal from the 12.
Well, if you go into that knowing it's four down territory, you don't have to throw a pass on third down.
But I guess.
If you know you're going to kick the ball, then yeah, you do.
They threw it short of the end zone on third and goal from the 12.
Not the first time this happened.
So I think they thought it was four down territory. They just thought, I don't want to run it on third and goal from the 12 and get 2 yards, and now it's fourth and goal from the 10. They were like, I'd rather have fourth and goal from the 5. It was a mess.
I do not want to absolve our head coach of blame here, because that fourth down, all of these fourth down plays had to have gone through him. If they're not, what kind of pro? Like, what are you doing, dude? Like that they should,
especially an offensive coordinator.
Yes,
he's an offensive coordinator.
So I don't want to absolve him of any guilt.
And here, he's like a super aggressive offensive coordinator.
Yes. What I think we should all realize, and I think we all should have known coming into this is why every other school that Mike Bobo has been at, they've hated his guts.
Yeah.
Is because he just does inexplicable things. He can do great things, like score 28 points in however many minutes against Mississippi State last week. Jeez.
He can develop quarterbacks.
He can do all these things, and then he does this crap where he forgets he has a running back running for 7 yards per carry in a game.
And I'll say right now we're probably gonna focus a little bit on coaching changes and all that nonsense. There's a lot of people who are like, you don't fire the head coach year one. And I'm one of those. You don't fire the head coach after year one.
I mean,
yeah, because it's another $20 million buyout. Right?
Yeah. And there are a lot of people who think you don't even fire coordinators after year one. And I'm not one of those guys.
I think it's hard to do that.
I usually think you don't, because continuity and coordinators.
But here's, let me give you an example.
But
so Dave Aranda. Dave Aranda last year goes to Baylor.
Yep.
He thinks he hits it out of the park and hires former North Carolina head coach
Larry Fedora
as their offensive coordinator. It sucks. Their offense last year was terrible. They fired Fedora in the offseason. He brings somebody else in. Their offense this year is great. And they're top
I believe that was Jeff Grimes. Isn't that bullpen?
They hired Jeff Grimes. And now they're a top 15 team in America with a chance to win their conference. You can fire bad offensive coordinators after year one just as long as you don't screw up replacing them.
Future Texas or Auburn head coach Jeff Grimes.
Hopefully Auburn. Hopefully tomorrow.
I agree with that. I think you can fire one. I think you can fire two.
You can't fire both of them. That's true.
And I think that may be we may be in a situation where you do need to fire two. I don't like to call for people's jobs at all. Like, it's not something I do. I just think that we're in a situation. It's going to be real toxic here next year if we have the same results.
Yeah.
It's going to be real toxic.
You cannot
Derek Mason on the basis that it was a total system change. He's committed to it. And another year, another offseason will help things.
Will it? Because a bunch of these guys that are actually good are going to leave.
Yeah, I know.
The problem is you can't convince me that can't convince me that the last regime wouldn't be better than 6-6 this year.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't.
I don't know, man. Gus never went 6-6.
He would have.
Yes, he did. What are you talking about?
Yeah, he did. We wouldn't have won at LSU. I don't think we would have beaten Arkansas. I don't think we would have beaten Ole Miss.
I think we would have beaten Penn State.
I think we would have beaten Mississippi State and South Carolina, though. That's the problem.
Hell yeah,
maybe. I don't know that we would have beaten South Carolina.
I think we would have beaten South Carolina, but I think Tank would not have been able to make the plane home. I think he would have been in a hospital. Like, I legitimately think that his legs would have fallen off.
I'm frustrated because it feels like all of the, short of 3-9 2012 disaster, right?
Yeah.
All of the bad losses that we've, withstood over the last decade or so have happened this year.
Yeah.
Or bad moments, I guess. We almost lost at home to a mid-level G5 team.
That's pretty bad. Losing to Tennessee at home is...
South Carolina on the road, that's a terrible team.
I think colleague Josh Dubb said that the loss to Georgia State statistically would have been the worst loss in the history of Auburn University.
Oh, yeah, it would have been. I still think
you lose that game and you're 5-7.
I still think Tennessee losing to Tennessee at home, that Tennessee team at home is way worse than either one of these two.
South Carolina team started a GA at quarterback this season.
Losing to them is above the guy that played against us.
Yeah,
yeah.
Losing to them might be worse than anything we've ever done.
I think
this is the South Carolina team that no longer has a top 10 draft pick in their secondary as well.
I still think last year's loss is worse. Just,
I don't know, man. No, last year's loss was worse because Bo dropped back 60 times and we were
I don't think these two losses are the worst losses in I just don't.
We lost to a top 25 Mississippi State team. That's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, and I despite his
foibles, we're beating 28-3.
I know. I that part stinks.
The last 4 weeks, we have 12 second half points.
I know.
Total. That's really bad.
That is bad coaching. That tells me that this roster is good enough to beat most of the teams they play because they've been beating most of the teams they play. And the coaching staff can't adjust in the second half to keep the pressure on.
Well, that's the frustrating thing about this team and about this coaching staff. I think individually, almost everybody on this team is better than they were last year.
I will also say,
short of the wide receiver.
I don't know.
Because you lost Eli Stove and Anthony Schwartz. And stuff.
Well, no, I'm just saying the guys on the team have improved.
Yeah, I would say these guys are better than they were last year, for sure.
As the team has gotten worse.
I will also say, Ryan, and maybe I don't know enough football. In basketball, you see this all the time where a team gets out to an early lead and then the other team is able to come back and win. And usually it's because the team that got out to an early lead doesn't have the depth.
Yeah.
Depth is usually the key indicator of blowing leads. Now,
but I don't feel like we're losing games because we can't keep our stars on the field.
Oh, yeah.
In this case, we're more talented than both South Carolina and Mississippi State.
60-something plays.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
It's not like this was a 90-play.
I don't,
missing out a lot. Defensively, we're missing out on, like, how many games have we played where our best 11 defensive player were on the field at the same time?
There's three, I think.
Yeah, three games.
Yeah.
That's pretty rough. Legitimately, we have not had...
Our best defensive performances.
We have not had our best 11
you
players
on the
field.
You should be able to score more than 21 points.
Oh, yeah.
Offensively, it's a disaster. Yeah. Offensively, this is one of the worst Auburn seasons since 08. This is horrible.
Really bad.
And I'd like to see what
our... It doesn't look like it over the whole game. There's flashes of this team should be putting up 35 a game.
Yeah. Bo Nix...
We're on two first three drives this week. You had your first four drives against Mississippi State. You put up, 28 first half points against Ole Miss?
Bo Nix looks reliable.
People used to get so mad at Gus for taking his foot off the gas, and they'd get mad at Tommy Tuber for taking his foot off the gas. This team just scores two touchdowns, and they're like, all right, we're good.
Yeah.
This team turns the car off.
Yeah.
Exactly. Jose Mourinho, head coach.
Coasting.
All right. Let's take a break. And then I'm done talking football, maybe for the year. And we're back, 20 minutes, 30 seconds in. Let's talk basketball. Basketball is my favorite sport.
We're going to cruise right past the Iron Bowl. That we're done.
You're not talking about it, Ryan.
I just wanted to make sure. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Enjoy a tailgate.
Let me give my two-sentence evaluation of the Iron Bowl. We have enough talent to give this Alabama team problems. We will get blown out, more than likely.
Give your shout-outs, Chief.
They're going to try very hard because they actually need a quality win here.
Yeah.
Hey, Chief, give your shout-outs from your trip to Columbia.
Yeah, anybody that's listening to this.
The upside-down cockroach that is Columbia's football stadium.
I would like to shout out all the couple of people that said that they had heard of our podcast when I gave them a koozie, and they're like, "Oh, you're one of the guys on there." I was like, "Yeah." They may have just been being nice, but sorry, that was not an accurate portrayal of your voice if you are listening. A couple of people said they had heard of the pod when I gave them a koozie.
Jack, can you make the title of this podcast "A Couple of People Have Heard of Us!" !
There we go. And I also enjoyed my trip to South Carolina. I don't know what Ferg's talking about it being a bad trip. The food was good. The people I hung out with were good, although it was just all Auburn people that
did
I
did you
knew,
eat at so. A Wingstop?
I did on the way home.
Okay. The food was good. I had a Wingstop.
West Columbia had Wingstop. No, we had Bojangles for breakfast day of.
Now we're talking.
Delish. And ate at a couple different places down there. Went to a beer garden. It used to be a flying saucer.
Yeah.
And they had a DJ in there. Just an old guy. Reminded me of DJ Oz, sans the JNCO jeans.
Now we're talking.
He was good. It was basically a private party for us. It was fun. And they were loud. I did think that they have a great atmosphere there. I know everybody thinks the towels are stupid, and I kind of do too, but it makes for a great atmosphere. So,
all right, let's Auburn beat USF, the South Florida Bulls, 58-52, which is a scoregami for Auburn.
Nice.
Auburn came back. This is a comeback victory. But for some reason, comeback victory that at no point, and this is weird for basketball, because usually when Auburn basketball is losing at the half, in the past even, I've been like, man, I don't know if we got this one. We're going to lose this game, especially when we're shooting as poorly as we shot the first half of this game.
We could not hit a shot.
But for whatever reason, I was like, yeah, we're going to win this game. Like, it was at no point that I have any, like, I didn't doubt it at all. We scored 26 first half points for Pete's sake.
Yeah, it was ugly.
And yet, I was like, yeah, we're going to win this game. Didn't matter to me. Shout out to Katie Johnson, who is...
He's our MVP right now.
I mean, we all thought we got KD on our team, Kevin Durant, and Jabari Smith. It turns out we might have, like, Russell Westbrook on our team and Katie Johnson. He is... At one point against South Florida, my brother and I watched the game. He decided, well, here's what I'm going to do. You're not going to get the ball across half court, and then I'm going to score. And like two straight trips, he forced a turnover, and then he scored a basket on the other end. It was unbelievable. He's a one-man full-court press.
This guy is a perfect Bruce Pearl player, aside from height, I think. And it's a shock.
That makes him more of a perfect Bruce Pearl player.
It's true.
It's shocking that we didn't get him in the first place.
He's like Javon. He's like Javon McCormick, but like a blue chip Javon McCormick. The only thing that would make Katie Johnson better is if like no one had ever heard of him. He transferred here from like some NAIA Christian school in Utah, and no one had ever heard of him before.
He's like a pit bull, man. Like
he legitimately is.
That's how I describe him. Just
start calling him Mr. Worldwide.
Mr. Worldwide.
Mr. Worldwide. he's just. I love him. I love him to death.
He talks that game too.
All right. Yeah, so does. In advanced statistics, Ryan, I love that you put this in here in the show notes. There is something called the four factors. The four factors. You've got effective field goal percentage, which is like regular field goal percentage, except that it's weighted for the fact that three-pointers are worth more than two-pointers. That's one of the four factors. The other one's free throw attempts per field goal attempt. So it doesn't matter how many times you're shooting field goals. Are you getting to the line that often is really important, because the most efficient shot on the basketball court is a 15-foot shot with nobody guarding you. Offensive rebound percentage is the third factor, which is what percentage of offensive rebounds are you getting? Your average is going to be around mid-30%. So if you miss a shot, that's fine. Are you getting at least 30% of your misses back? And then turnover rate. So how many of your possessions end in a turnover by percentage? So in the four factors, Auburn narrowly lost in effective field goal percentage. 38% to 40%. Yet one, which is kind of amazing, because you've got a guy like Jabari Smith is a EFG dream. Katie Johnson as well is an EFG dream. That stat loves those guys. Free throw attempts for field goal attempts, aka the Austin Wiley statistic. Auburn won that one 0.26 to 0.17. So over a quarter of Auburn shots, which is a pretty big deal in a 6-point game. For over a quarter of Auburn's attempts ended in a free throw attempt, basically. So Auburn took 6 more free throws than the Bulls. Auburn got 40% of its offensive rebounds as opposed to 34% to South Florida. That's amazing when you're not shooting very well to be able to say, well, we're going to get 4 out of every 10 of our misses.
Yeah. And that tracks of like, you know, you ask why is it just offensive rebounding percentage? You look at both teams' offensive rebounding, the inverse is your defensive rounding.
Well, the amazing thing about this is that if you watch an NBA game now, especially, nobody gives a rip about offensive rebounds in the NBA anymore. Like, they do not care. Legitimately, once the guy shoots, 5 guys run back. Nobody tries to get a rebound.
Part of
that is you just have better shooters.
Better shooters, exactly.
There's less chances for offensive rebounding.
And the chances of you getting beat in transition are real high. If somebody like Russell Westbrook, for instance, gets a defensive rebound, he is already at the other basket.
That reminds me a little bit of how the game has shifted over the last 10 years, basically, and now it's pretty much fully there on free throws. Mm-hmm. Like nobody, you don't put your big guys down.
Exactly.
You put your big guys back on defense, and because you're not worried about it.
You put an athletic three there now.
Because one, guys should be able to shoot free throws and hit them. Two, on the off chance they miss them, the guy down low is going to get it 90% of the time,
right.
No matter what, unless it's a bad bounce, and then it's going out even further. So if
it's a bad bounce and it goes out further and the point guard gets it and you don't have a big guy back,
right.
It's 2 points the other way before you can blink.
Yep. So that it's just the way the game has changed now, and it's trickled down to the college side of things, and offensive rebounds may at some point. But
only if you start seeing guys like Steph Curry right now, by the way, is shooting over 50% from three.
That's
if you start seeing guys making more than one out of every two of the three-pointers at the college level, yeah, you might see that happen.
Yeah, I wonder if that just, like, if you have a team where a guy shoots, like, 40-45%, then that team just doesn't even bother trying to get the, you know, yeah, going for the
So
it's better just to try to get the ball back.
So. Auburn turned the ball over 22% of its possessions, which is why this was a six-point game,
yeah,
as opposed to South Florida, who only turned it over 17% of their possessions. And I would imagine most of those turnovers for South Florida were in the second half, because it was...
Yeah, yep, they were.
Auburn ramped up the defense in the second half.
And most of those for Auburn were in the first half as well. I think it was... Yeah. They've had 10 turnovers in the first half.
Yeah.
When they were averaging
really bad.
Auburn had a post-game win expectancy of only 43%, which I find that to be fascinating.
You can find different numbers different places, yeah, but this is just something I kind of worked up last year with these four factors. You know, you just kind of see how often teams with a performance in those four stats at different levels would win a game, and a team performing at the way Auburn did in those four factors would only win about 43% of the time. So got a little bit lucky in that one. And it's, there's four factors, but you know, scoring is how you win. So effective field goal percentage is weighted a lot more heavily,
yeah,
than the other three. And losing that one makes it tough to kind of overcome.
This is like the old, the original Uncle Drew commercials where Bill Russell tells Uncle Drew, this game, listen, young blood, this game has been and always will be about getting buckets. And I think that the four factors correctly take that into account. This game is about one thing, and that's getting buckets. Can you put the ball in the basket? And I think Auburn did not do that at all in the first half, and hence they lost some of those. Your game MVP has to be, well, you've got actually Zepp Jasper.
I've got Zepp Jasper here, and some of that is his efficiency.
Yeah.
Because Auburn was getting nothing from their guards, really. Well, not their guards, from Wendell Green, who was scoreless in this game. Zepp played a lot of good minutes, 13 points on 4-7 shooting, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, steal. And that's not even quantifying his defense either, which was fantastic playing the press. So, yeah, he actually, in adjusted game score, he came out as the MVP.
Nice.
Didn't Devin have a sneaky plus 29?
Yeah, he was. He was plus 24 at least.
That's incredible. Because he did not have a particularly good game.
Well, he was good on defense, and I think that's what it was.
Yeah, right, right.
He was part of that like second half run where Auburn went like on a 15-0 run. And it was that –
lineup for that was
– Katie Johnson, Zepp, Devin, and Zepp.
Zepp, Katie, Devin,
Jalen at the
Jalen
five.
Jalen and Bardwell.
Yeah. And Jabari wasn't on the court.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is odd. Yeah. Like Jabari and Kessler, who you would think are your two best defensive bigs, weren't on the court because we were running this like diamond press. It was a Gegen press, to use a soccer term. What that means, Ryan, a Gegen press is a soccer term which basically means again press. So when you lose the ball on your opponent's end of the court, so let's say I have the ball and I'm trying to score a goal against you, and you steal it, instead of getting back on defense, we immediately press again because the ball is closer to your goal. It would be much easier for us to now score a goal if we were to get the ball away from you. This is Gegen press. This is what happened, basically. It was a full court press that wasn't necessarily after missed baskets. It was just all the time. If I missed a shot, we were pressing on missed shots, which is wild. Usually on a missed shot, you get back.
This is
we've always talked about Bruce like loving to run, and we just haven't had the defensive guards to do it.
We haven't had the number of bodies to do it.
Right. Yeah. You can't do that with seven guys. It's got to be 10.
We played. Yeah, what's his name?
Katie had fouls.
Yeah.
Katie had 4 fouls for a lot of the second half.
We played Chandler Leppard big minutes in this game.
Leo Berman.
Yeah, Leo Berman. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Leo.
No, you're right, though. Leor played great. He played 10 minutes in this game. He played more than Cardwell and Chris Moore, actually.
Yeah.
And that was because of the foul trouble with KD.
Yeah, he played a ton.
Leor had 3 offensive rebounds and was he was getting in there scrapping with guys.
Yeah.
He's not a guy that you want to have to lean on, especially come conference play, but it's a good guy to have as your 11th, 12th guy on the bench.
He's not the most fluid guy on offense, and
he's a walk-on.
He's a walk. I think it has more to do with he just doesn't get a lot of run with the first nine other guys, and so it comes off a little awkward. Like you'll see the way guys pass to him, and it's a product of them not knowing what he's going to do exactly, and him not exactly knowing what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Well, then that problem is kind of throughout the whole roster still, and it's just because these guys still don't have that many games together.
They don't have any practice minutes. They don't have anything together, and so that's just going to gel them more. And the thing that away tournaments like this, like we're about to go into, are huge for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Like, well, one second, I wanted to actually talk about how Wendell Green and Gay Johnson are just destroying in usage percentage. So percentage is like possession usage percentage, which if you might imagine is the Sharif Cooper statistic. What percentage of possessions of players responsible for ending? Do you end it with a turnover? Do you end it with a point? Do you end it with a missed shot, a made shot, whatever?
And assists count into it a little bit.
Yeah,
not a full credit, but you get some credit for it.
Right. So your average usage rate is 20%. These guys are above 20%. Sharif was the highest.
Sharif was in the mid-30s, I believe.
Yeah, he was the highest usage percentage guy we've had at Auburn under Bruce by a considerable margin. You really don't even want someone with that high of a usage unless it is, unless you're the Oklahoma State Thunder and you have Russell Westbrook, that his usage would be in the 30s every year. I mean, right. If you got a guy who can get you triple double every single game, yes. But if you don't, it usually means you got a guy who thinks or is the only option. But these two guys, if you had told me before the year, oh yeah, Wendell Green and Katie Johnson are going to be leading the team of usage, I'd say, well, we should probably make it Jabari Smith.
he's close. He's at 25%. Wendell and Katie are at 27.
Because he's the best player on the team.
Those are the only three guys are 20% right now. So.
And what's wild is he is the best player on the team, and three games into the year, it's fairly obvious to everyone, right? Like, it's not like I'm making this up. It's fairly obvious to any.
Oh, yeah, and it's not even like seeing Isaac Okoro or seeing Chuma Okeke is like, oh man, this guy's better, but he's got to get the confidence. Like, no, like we all already know he is already the best player.
Sure.
He passes
it's not like he's going to get there. He already is.
What was it? I think it was Mark Richt. He had the wife test. If he had a recruit that he wasn't sure on, he would take his wife to the game, to a high school game. And if his wife couldn't figure out which kid he was there to see, he wouldn't offer the kid.
That seems very Mark Richt-y. So, yeah, I'll go with that.
Jabari Smith passes that test. You take somebody no clue what's going on, and you said, who's the best player on the court? They pick out Jabari Smith pretty quick.
Yeah, he is. He is our best player, and Katie Johnson is our MVP currently this season, I think.
I mean, and Jabari didn't play great in this game. He hit two big threes, but only shot 20% from two. And he still had 9 points and 10 rebounds.
You make a good point here in the show notes, Ryan. Kessler and Carbell we need more out of them offensively.
Yeah, yeah. I had car in Atlanta traffic while this game was going on. And, not just that, and then in construction and just past Augusta. And so I was a little stressed out anyway. And I had some unkind words for Walker Kessler in this game. Because we got to have more out of him. And
he's doing great on defense, but we just need more points.
Just need to be more aggressive. And I kind of see why maybe he didn't get any run at UNC last year. Because I think his first instinct is to get out there around the 3-point line. He's freaking 7-1 or whatever. Like, dude. Get in there and bang, man.
He needs to make more threes. If he's going to shoot as many threes as he's taking, he needs to make a little bit more of them.
He hasn't made any.
He's only over one this one, I will say.
he hasn't made any yet. That's the biggest issue.
And neither has anybody else. Auburn is currently, according to the show notes, the 249th best team at shooting threes in America. As opposed to UConn, who we play this week, who is the 42nd best team in America at shooting three-pointers. So this is not a classic Ryan, tell us how they can't shoot threes.
I can tell you that they don't shoot threes.
They don't shoot many, but they shoot them well when they do.
They're 301st in three-point attempt rate. So they don't like to shoot threes, but they will.
Who is their coach that's not Kevin Ollie?
What was their old coach's name?
UConn?
Yeah. Kevin Ollie. The guy who said... Jim Calhoun.
Yeah, Calhoun.
Not JC. 1 cent back, Jim Calhoun. Do you remember this, yeah. Ryan?
Dan Hurley is... I know who Dan Calhoun is. I don't know much.
No, Jim Calhoun. Jim Calhoun famously was the highest paid person in Connecticut. At public schools, obviously.
That's right.
He was the highest paid public employee of the state of Connecticut. And
it's a very small state.
Right. And in like 2008, the financial crisis hit. And they were like asking professors to take pay cuts at UConn or something like this. And a reporter asked Jim Calhoun if he felt bad or would he give any salary to help other people through this hard time. And Jim Calhoun was just like, not 1 cent. He like was like defiant, like, no, I'm not giving a dime back. Anyway, that's UConn basketball. And he had the most like thick Connecticut accent. Jim Calhoun was the most UConn.
He was Connecticut personified.
Yeah.
Not that they're all a-holes.
Not 1 cent back. You can look this up, Brian, later. It's a hilarious YouTube video.
Dan Hurley, you said.
Dan Hurley? Okay.
Lost?
Yeah. This is going to be a... Not Bobby Hurley.
No.
The other basketball player. This is going to be a really good game, unfortunately. I would like to blow everybody out by 100, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
These look like some evenly matched teams.
This is going to be just look at how they're both ranked. Auburn moved up to what, 18th? And
UConn's, I believe, 23rd right now in the people.
Yeah,
so UConn's actually slightly favored in Kenpom. But it's a toss up. It's like a 1 point game.
The fascinating thing is that UConn's a high paced team. So this game, I think Auburn.
We don't see this very often. They're a high paced offense, but they want long defensive possessions.
Right. But I think that they're not going to get them because I think that Auburn's a hype, likes to run, or will let love you let will love to let us run.
We're also pretty terrible in the half court, so
we're not a good half court
thus far.
This could be an NBA All-Star game up and down game, which means Jabari might have 45. I guess it could be one of those.
This could be a breakout.
We might lose, and he has 45 points and 10 rebounds or something like that.
This is a good matchup for Jabari. It's weird. UConn is a taller team than Auburn by, on average, about a full inch. But it's not in the front court. UConn's got a couple of centers that are 6'9". They're
nice.
Four, I think, is 6'8". So Jabari, even playing the four, is going to be bigger than anybody else out there for UConn. Hopefully that gets them some looks at the rim. Rack up his rebounds again. And they'll also have to contend with either Kessler or Cardwell down there. It's really important they have a big game in this one. Because the height advantage we have in the front court, we definitely don't have in the back court. Going to make life hard shooting for Wendell and Katie and those guys.
Huh. All right. Well,
this is, and then we play. Let's say we lose to UConn or beat UConn, I'd love to beat them. We play the winner or loser of Michigan State Loyola. This is Loyola Marymount, right?
Yeah, I believe, right?
Chicago.
Chicago. Okay.
The good one. Sister Jean.
Yeah. Not Loyola Marymount.
Flying her down to the Bahamas, giving her an Atlantis trip.
That's better than being in Chicago this week.
These are both likely tournament teams because they seem to make it every single year. You'd be interested by Michigan. Oh, when has Auburn played? When was the last time Auburn played Michigan State?
Give me 5 seconds and I can.
Oh. Been a long time.
I don't know if they have. It's possible that they've never played.
I don't remember ever playing Tom Izzo.
Yeah.
I don't remember ever seeing him abuse or scream at some kid.
It's possible it's happened, you know, in the depths of the past. But, I mean, we probably haven't played Loyola Chicago either, so.
Sweet Sister Jean.
Two brand new matchups, possibly.
The other side of the bracket.
Michigan State once in 1989 in a regular season. We lost that game 79-92.
Oh, wow. This is a revenge game.
I don't know which one.
Well, Marymount was the good one in the 90s, and then Chicago's the good one now.
Yeah.
I don't know about the one in the 60s, though.
Wow. Here's the deal, Ryan. There was a guy named Ignatius, and he was from a city called Loyola, which is in Spain. And Ignatius was an amazing person. So good, they called him St. Ignatius. And he founded an order of people called the Jesuits. And the Jesuits decided, we are just going to make some schools. And they have made so many schools. And they named their schools after Loyola, the city that St. Ignatius is from. That's why there's a million Loyolas.
Is it Spring Hill that's a Jesuit school in Mobile?
Probably, man. If it's a school and it's Catholic, there's a really good chance it's Jesuit.
And I'm sure listener can tell us anyway. So we play either those two, and then what are the other balls in the other side
of the bracket? Spinner. Go for it, Ryan. Yeah,
Syracuse, VCU, Baylor, and Arizona State. We could play any one of those teams on Friday.
I talked to my Baylor contact today, Jamie, who was on the show a couple weeks ago. He and I met this afternoon. Jamie really likes their team this year, but doesn't think they're as good as they were last year.
They're not as good as the best team in the country.
I guess we should have had you crunch the numbers here via KenPom, Ryan, to tell us who the favorites are.
So Baylor's – I know Baylor's the favorite because they're a top 10 KenPom team.
And they're the returning national champions.
Yeah.
Right. And outside of that, VCU is the only team outside the top 100 in KenPom. They're 119th, I think.
All right.
Everybody else is kind of in that 20 to 60 range. So, I mean, this is going to be a very competitive tournament.
VCU, shout out to Bryn and Adam.
Are they listeners? Or?
Maybe. Yeah. Bryn, definitely VCU, not. Adam, probably.
Original home of Sumir Dowdy, right?
That's right.
That's correct.
And also Will Wade.
Oh, yeah.
And right. Chaka Smart. Shout out to Chaka Smart.
Wade and his khakis.
All right. Yeah, I mean, regardless of what games you win or lose this week, this is definitely a resume builder.
It's more about having fun anyway.
Yeah. I mean,
fun in the sun, baby.
You obviously don't want to go over, but, you know, even winning one doesn't hurt you on your resume. Well, you win two, which really good.
Yeah, it's really just good practice for tournament time.
Here's the thing. This will be a chance for Jabari Smith to be on a national television spotlight against big time teams like UConn, Michigan State. And if Bruce is smart, which I think he is telling Jabari Smith, this is your chance to make some big money in the future.
Go right kill now. These people.
Go kill these people. You're the best player on the court. Jabari Smith will be the best player on the court in every court he plays this season, most likely, unless we play Gonzaga at some point or Duke.
Even if we play Duke.
Yeah, I mean, Duke's got a really good guy. I like that. I like Paolo a lot, but I don't know.
Yeah, we'll leave it there.
Okay. I think Jabari's better. but I think, yeah, Chet Holmgren's unbelievable at Gonzaga, so that's a whole different deal.
We're on that. NBA potential thread, though. Did you guys see, I think it was earlier this week, where there was somebody put together a composite of, like, best bang for your buck if you're an NBA scout, who to go watch, like, which team, and Auburn was number 3 on that list.
Yeah, I saw that.
And that was basically insane.
It's a composite of basically everybody at Auburn's team will play professional basketball somewhere. Maybe not in the NBA, but maybe in Europe or Philippines or something.
Right. And they, like, it's an insane list when you look at it, because it's like Gonzaga, Duke, Auburn, UCLA. Like, it's like weird.
But it helps when you have a guy who might be the top five pick in the draft.
Sure.
I'm sure he raises the average.
But I mean, that's probably taking Allen into account. It's taking Walker Kessler into account.
Almost everyone, it's a consensus that Auburn has three NBA draft picks this year. Right? Like, everyone thinks Walker in the second, Allen borderline first, second, and then Jabari in the first. And so,
yeah, I mean, if they all go, they would all be drafted. I don't know. After this past draft, I don't want to.
It's tough, man. It's really tough because there's only 60 spots. And we say this all the time. There's only 60 guys who get drafted in the NBA. A lot of guys play or get on summer league rosters.
Even at the top end, it's like, you know, we didn't expect Chuma to be a mid first round pick, and he was. Right. We didn't quite think Isaac was going to be a number five pick.
I did not think that was happening. I thought maybe ninth pick in the draft for Isaac. I did not expect fifth.
I even more so than in the NBA or in the NFL, I have no idea what draft day looks like.
It just takes one team. But similar to the NFL, it literally just takes one team.
There could also be some guy from Europe that, like, comes out of nowhere and everybody wants him in this draft, right, too. So,
luckily for Jabari, there are no Olympics or World Championships between now and the draft.
Yeah.
So nobody's going to go ball out, which is what happened in, like, Luka's case between now and the draft.
But anyway, we got 3 games, 3 days, right?
Yeah,
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
This is the fun stuff. Yeah. I still.
And these games are on big ESPN. Am I wrong?
Oh yeah. So yeah, the first one UConn game is a 1:30 Central game. So if you're still working Wednesday, make some time. Sneak this on. Nobody else at the office. Just
everybody at my office took off this week, so I guess I'm taking off too.
No, that's the move, Chief. The move is to not take those days off.
Well,
find out if everybody else is, and you just couch those PTO days.
Yeah. I'm going to work Wednesday morning, and then I'll be available for emails that no one else is going to be sending. So it's fine.
That's the move. You save those PTO days for when you need to be gone.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Good ep. I think solid episode. One of our betters. Very sportsy.
Yeah, what are you guys looking forward to most to eat on Thursday? Or whenever you're doing your
I like dark meat I like dark meat turkey. Thank you for asking, Chief. And I like pie. And I like
big pie guy myself.
A couple of years ago we started this thing where my mom bought a bunch of like pickled stuff. So like pickled okras, pickles. Olives, and that was my favorite.
You just snack on it all day?
Snack on it, and then I have it on my plate, get a really salty bite with some of the more savory stuff.
Yeah, I'm kind of going in blind this year. I'm not going up to Atlanta, but I've got a friend of mine who's doing Thanksgiving and invited me over, and I'm no idea how that's going to go. I've eaten in his house before. It's usually pretty good. Thanksgiving is always a little different.
I would have invited you over to ours if.
It's fine. We're eating dinner Friday. We'll be all right.
That's true. I always, this time of year, look forward. Backstory, I used to. Thanksgiving was like one of my least favorite holidays because no one in my family can cook. Sorry if anyone listening hears that, but it's true. Onion is not the only thing to add flavor to food. So, and then I met my wife and her mother's dressing. She makes a regular version, which is good, and a spicy version, which is usually only for her, but now it's for me and her.
Awesome.
And it is delicious. And she also makes a sweet potato souffle casserole, whatever you want to call it. It is the best thing that I have ever had for Thanksgiving. And I am super bummed anytime. The one or two times since I met my wife that I haven't been able to get it fresh on Thanksgiving Day. So I am super pumped for both of those.
Yeah, my wife's a good cook, and she makes this like incredible corn casserole. And then it turns to find out it's like the easiest recipe on earth.
A lot of things are.
I'm like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, just don't screw it up. Keep making that.
I had to make some stuffing, stovetop stuffing for
For the 5-year-olds. How'd it go?
For the 5-year-olds. Those kids were tearing it up. The adults were like, man, this stuffing's good. Stressing. And I'm like, God, white people.
Yeah.
You were stressing on how to make
it. Because I was like, I've never eaten it. I've never eaten stovetop. Like, I'm like, what? I don't know what. You just make it? Like, do you add stuff in it? So I did some Italian seasoning in there and used the chicken flavor stovetop. And Sammy Coates' kid was tearing it up, apparently. His mom was like, oh, you like that stuffing? I was like, yeah. I was like, wow. I thought it tasted fine.
Yeah. Here's the weird thing about – this is a weird – my hottest take of Thanksgiving is if you live in a town that has a really good, nice hotel that has a buffet, you should just go do that. Like, it's going to be expensive. It's going to be expensive, but, like, you go, it's going to be probably better than what you're making. Like, here in town, there's the Omni, which is this super nice hotel in Dallas. And its buffet is a place called Texas Spice, and it is unreal how good their brunch is. And I just looked at their Thanksgiving menu, and I'm like, yeah, that's going to be way better than what you need. Like, I don't care. Everybody I know, my family has, we have good cooks in my family, but, like, that's going to be better, and I'm not going to have to do any dishes.
Yeah, yeah. My granddad used to cater things if we did Thanksgiving with him. But we usually didn't do it on Thanksgiving. It'd be like day or two before, day or two after, or whatever. You used to just get some sort of catering. I guess you call it catering. It's just
listen to this, Ryan, if you're anti like this. People. So they've got your choice of an herb roasted Tom turkey with giblet gravy and citrus cranberry sauce on top of it.
Smoke.
Red chili rub sirloin of beef. Or you could get a cranberry cabernet braised short ribs.
Those last two options are right up my alley.
I mean, what are we doing? Why aren't we doing this?
I am of the opinion.
My Thanksgiving hot take is, sit-down meals are overrated. You should treat it like a tailgate because there's no way you're going to get all these different foods ready at the same time. And if you try and do a sit-down meal, then some stuff gets cold and it's not really practical.
Yeah, that was always one of my problems.
You eat each dish as it's available, and then whenever the turkey's done at like 3-4 o'clock,
yeah. Just a movable feast.
Carve and eat. That is honestly that is what we normally do. You carve and eat your turkey. Right on, like as it comes off, as soon as it's cool enough to eat, you eat it then.
I mean, that's what Haley's family has always done when we've had turkey with them.
Football on, there's basketball on. Like
that was one of my biggest problems with Thanksgiving as a kid too. Is like half the dishes that weren't supposed to be cold would be cold,
You eat it at the restaurant, Ryan. Everything comes out hot.
Or you just eat it when it's ready.
It's a professional. Who's doing this?
You can eat all day, though.
Yeah.
You want to say it's
charcuterie board coming out as part of your salad course. Yeah. I mean, the deviled chipotle chive deviled eggs.
Well, that's not for me, but.
Man. Yeah, all right.
That chili rubbed sirloin. Salad.
Bro. Why am I not doing that?
Got me all hot and bothered.
All right, guys. It's been wonderful. I hope everyone listening has a happy Thanksgiving. We will see you next week.
Oh, nice.
Have a War Eagle weekend.